everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you. We are off and running with our Thursday edition of the Buckmaster Show, the 21st of March.
Or, Bill, as my dad used to say, let's get this show on the road.
You know, I heard that too growing up as a kid. That's Tom Fairbanks, my engineer producer. And Tom, looking at the forecast, there is one thing I just do not like about living in Tucson, and that is when we get these winds and the dust and all that, and now they're saying for the weekend, blowing dust and could be 35-mile-an-hour gusts or more.
Is that Saturday?
Yeah, Saturday into Sunday. And, yeah. And it always comes after I've had the yard, some yard work done.
How have you been doing with allergies lately? They've been getting me a little bit.
Doing well. Using a natural product, it's called Zone 6, and so far it's been working pretty well. Just gave them a free plug, but no, if it helps somebody else, I always recommend it. It's homeopathic and available all the different places like Whole Foods, Sprouts, and on and on. We're in our 14th year with the radio program, and we're so glad we are now into year 14. We come to you from the Bustos Media Complex, where we have five radio stations under one roof. This one's 1030 KVOI. The VOI, of course, works well with The Voice. That's what we are, Tucson's only source for local, live, local news and talk. And we're in the Green Thing, Zocalo Village Studio. We have our worldwide live listening on my website, buckmastershow.com, where we piggyback the live feed from kvoi.com. My website is also the place where we have 13 years of programs conveniently archived for you. The Live Line, we'll be doing actually a lot on the Live Line today, presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Why don't we start things off on the Live Line with Pima County Supervisor Rex Scott. He is a Democrat representing the district where I live. It's District 1 on the five-member Board of Supervisors. Supervisor Scott, how are you today?
Bill, I'm doing really well. Always great to spend time with you, Tom, and your listeners.
Well, we have a lot to unpack over our two 10-minute segments with you. Let's begin with what happened at the board meeting on March 5th. An ordinance was passed. The vote was 4-1. Supervisor Christie was the lone dissenting vote. He is the lone Republican on the board. And the board passed an ordinance requiring gun owners to report the theft or loss of a firearm or face a fine of up to $1,000. It takes effect in 30 days from the vote. Well, since then, we've had two state lawmakers calling on you and your colleagues to repeal this new firearms ordinance. Now the Goldwater Institute, the think tank up in Phoenix, based up in Phoenix, is now threatening a lawsuit aimed at Pima County. What is your take on where we are with this right now, Rex Scott?
The intent of the ordinance, Bill, is to give law enforcement tools to act when people use what are known as straw purchases, where they ostensibly buy a gun for themselves, but then they give it to a prohibited possessor, somebody who under state law is not allowed to possess a firearm. And prohibited possessors commit a great many of the crimes in Pima County that are associated with firearms. So what we're trying to do with this ordinance is provide law enforcement with tools so that they can deal with those straw purchasers who are putting weapons in the hands of prohibited possessors. And I would think that state legislators, especially state legislators who represent part of Pima County, like Senator Wadsack, would be more interested in making sure that criminals and other prohibited possessors don't get firearms, and less concerned with, frankly, mouthing the shopworn platitudes of the gun lobby. If you are a law-abiding citizen in this county, you have nothing to be concerned about with this ordinance. But if you are somebody who is acting in an illegal way to get guns in the hands of people who under state law are not supposed to have them, then you should be concerned with this ordinance. But the problem that Senator Wadsack and other people have is anytime you mention anything having to do with sensible gun reform measures designed to combat gun violence or gun crime, immediately you go to the NRA playbook and say that we're trying to threaten the Second Amendment. And I think the public is tired of it. They're tired of people being the handmaidens of the gun lobby instead of standing up for public health and safety. So I absolutely will not take any steps to repeal this ordinance. And I'm especially disappointed that somebody who represents part of Pima County doesn't see that this is a vital public health and safety measure.
Now, your legal staff obviously looked this over and vetted it to the best of their ability, I assume, before this was actually brought to the board.
Definitely. We worked with two of County Attorney Conover's staff members in drafting the ordinance, and very much targeted the language of the ordinance to ensure that it wasn't in violation of existing state law. But I think it's important that people understand that that existing state law is again an example of how the majority in the legislature is more interested in appeasing the NRA and the other members of the gun lobby than they are in protecting public health and safety, because that statute that Senator Wadsack and her colleague cited preempts local governments from taking measures to deal with gun crime and gun violence in ways that are stricter, that are in state law. It's what's known as a preemption statute. And those preemption statutes have been put in place throughout this country by state legislators like Senator Wadsack, who are more interested in following through on the wishes of the NRA and the gun lobby than they are in protecting public health and safety.
Where did this come from? Did you hear a lot from, is this constituent driven, Rex Scott?
What it's driven by is the fact that prohibited possessors, and again, prohibited possessors are defined under state law, commit a significant number of gun crimes in Pima County, according to data that we have from the county attorney's office. But there is no similar statute under state law that says that if straw purchasers claim to have lost or stolen a firearm, but in fact they didn't, they're using these straw purchases to put guns in the hands of prohibited possessors, there's no way of moving against them. So this local ordinance is giving law enforcement tools to deal with something that's being used to put firearms in the hands of people who are committing crimes with them. And again, I don't know why we would not be more concerned about keeping guns out of the hands of criminals and less concerned with following up on the agenda of the National Rifle Association and the rest of the gun lobby.
Do you think that this is you obviously feel that it's said it is unconstitutional. And I thought we would hear from Charles Heller, and he's on line one right now. And Charles Heller is the host of America Armed and Free, which airs here on Sunday. Charles, go ahead. You're with Rex Scott.
Supervisor Scott. ARS 13-3102 is called misconduct involving weapons, and it already makes having a prohibited possessor in possession of a firearm in Arizona a state felony. Furthermore, it's a federal felony worth 10 years in prison. Why would a misdemeanor statute have any effect on someone who isn't obeying a felony law?
There is no means for local law enforcement to deal with people who are failing to report lost or stolen weapons. And that's why we worked in partnership with the county attorney to put this ordinance in place.
That's true. But if someone lies about it, there are five crimes they can be charged with, three of which are felonies, which are easily prosecutable. Again, if you already have the tools, what, and you're not using those, why would you need another?
Because my understanding, again, from working with our county attorney who handles those local prosecutions, is that this was a tool that would help them to deal with straw purchases that are clearly not examples of lost or stolen weapons. These are people who fail to report lost or stolen weapons and instead put them in the hands of prohibited possessors. So I'm interested in hearing from the people who handle prosecutions for us locally and what they're able to do and what they'd like to be able to do.
All right, Charles.
Have you read those? Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Charles, for weighing in there. All right, Supervisor Rex Scott with us. Got a lot more to talk about with Supervisor Scott. Mona's Danish Bakery is our go-to bakery when we want some really good, not only bakery goods, but we want some good comfort food. Mona's, home of the Danish Kringle, northeast corner, Swan and Sunrise. They are now serving liquor, which means you can have a beer with your lunch, or you can do the mimosa for breakfast, which is champagne and orange juice. Mona's is open daily, except for Monday, open at 6:30. The door is open and folks are waiting, and I don't blame them. When the door is open, they want the bakery goods that are right out of the oven. Mona'sDanishBakery.com is the website. More with Pima County Supervisor Rex Scott after we take our first break. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year plan includes roadway, transit, pedestrian, bicycle, and many other transportation improvements across the region. Pima County voters approved the plan in 2006, and the RTA is finalizing a new 20-year plan for RTA board review and approval to seek public feedback on the draft plan. Sign up at rtanext.com for updates.
Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in Southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in Southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com. For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rito River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Welcome back. It is Buckmaster in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio, Green Things 3384 East River Road, right by the Rito River, just west of the Brandy Fenton Park, 13-acre site. Everything you need for your spring gardening. Their website's greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com. And, of course, we also a big shout-out to our friends in Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico, only about a three-hour drive, and I can't think of a better time of year with spring now coming on than making the trip over, about a three-hour drive to Silver City, doing some hiking in the Gila National Wilderness. Their website will tempt you with all sorts of outdoor activities, and plus there's some wonderful indoor activities as well, like the Western New Mexico University is based in Silver City, and the museum there has the finest collection of Mimbres pottery in the world. Just a couple of the many things to do in Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. The website, southwestnewmexico.org. Okay, still a lot to talk about here with our monthly visit with Pima County Supervisor Democrat Rex Scott, representing District 1 on the five-member board. Pima County Treasurer Beth Ford has announced her resignation. I believe her last day will be April 12th. She would like the board, you and your colleague, Supervisor Scott, to appoint her chief deputy, former lawmaker Chris Ackerley, to the position, to fill out the position. Any thoughts on that?
Well, I want to first thank the county treasurer for her many years of service to Pima County. She has done an exceptional job, and she is clearly a dedicated public servant who's always had the best interests of the constituents that she serves at heart. I understand that is her preference to have her chief deputy appointed, but the board with all vacancies, constables, certainly Supervisor Bronson, when she resigned, has followed a process where we put something out to the public to see if any other member of the public is interested in being considered for the seat. We do have to appoint a Republican because Treasurer Ford is a Republican, but I think it's fair to put out the notice to other members of the public to see there if there are other Republican residents of Pima County who want to be considered for the appointment to fill out the balance of her term.
Now, let's talk a little bit about personnel and openings, vacant positions in Pima County. You brought this, you introduced this topic, I believe, this week, correct?
Actually, it was at the last meeting, and Okay. Then we talked about it again at this meeting, and We're going to revisit it at our next meeting on April 2nd.
And there are how many vacancies? Up to 1,000 right now in Pima County?
So consistently for many years, not only under this board's tenure, but under the tenure of previous boards of supervisors, the county has had anywhere from 900 to 1,000 positions vacant at any given time. We've got right around 7,000, slightly more than 7,000 people who work for Pima County. But we're also carrying anywhere from 900 to 1,000 vacant positions at any time. And those are oftentimes positions that are fully budgeted. And what I've proposed is that for any position that is vacant for 240 days or more, that position will be eliminated. And there will be 4 points in the year at the beginning of each fiscal quarter that will take a look at vacant positions and eliminate them if they've been vacant for 240 days or more. What we've been talking about as a board, along with the county administration and the elected officials, is that we want to apply this new policy in a very precise and deliberate way. We understand that there are positions in various departments that are hard to fill. We don't want to just make these vacancy eliminations across the board without careful thought and looking at needs for reasonable exceptions. But we need to put a dent in this number in the interest of accountability, fiscal responsibility, transparency, all of which are duties that we have to the people who represent us. We cannot continue this multi-year trend of carrying 900 to 1,000 vacant positions. It is just not sustainable. So I'm certainly interested in doing this the right way and taking into account the concerns of elected officials and department heads. But we've got to put a dent in this number. This is just not a sustainable situation.
Well, let's move on to the RTA next. That topic was we spent a lot of time not only with the mayor and then General Maxwell, of the Southern Arizona Leadership Council, and of course General Maxwell and the mayor both have seats at the table on the nine-member, as do you, on the nine-member Regional Transportation Authority Board, which is steering where we go with RTA next. As you might have heard, and I think you did hear the mayor say that there were a couple of issues that that she is concerned with, that it's kind of holding back her support. Treatment, pavement preservation, and transit were the two big ones.
Well, I don't know that anybody on the nine-member board is ready to move a draft plan into the public review process. I think there are concerns that I have heard expressed by all of my colleagues, not just by Mayor Romero, about the two draft plans that we're considering. But we have scheduled two additional meetings on top of the two scheduled meetings so that we can hopefully, by the end of our May meeting, have a plan ready to send out for the public review process. And that's going to be important that we meet that deadline, if you will, because the public review process will probably take up the better part of the second half of 2024, with the goal of having an RTA next election on the ballot in May of 2025.
How do you feel? Where are we at? Do you still feel confident about RTA next, Rex Scott?
I do, Bill. This region, the way it has grown and developed, is interconnected in terms of where we work, where we shop, where we play. Certainly the city of Tucson is the center of our region, but there are four other cities and towns that are part of Pima County, and over a third of Pima County residents live in the unincorporated county. And I consider myself their voice on the RTA board, because who else is going to speak out for the interests of the 34% of people in Pima County who live in the unincorporated county? I do think it's absolutely vital that all nine of us be in support of an RTA next plan and be able to go back to our constituents and say that this is a plan that is good for everybody in the county. We cannot go our separate ways. The county is too interconnected for us to each try and figure out our transportation needs by ourselves. And people, you know, I was talking with a constituent the other day, and when he drives to work, he leaves one of the smaller towns, he drives through the unincorporated county, and he ends up in Tucson where he works. And that's a great example of the interconnectedness of our region. And failing to act regionally and have an RTA plan for the next 20-year period is not going to be beneficial to anybody in Pima County, regardless of where we live. So I think it's important that all nine of us continue to work together to hear each other's concerns and to find that common ground that has eluded us so far, but I think is very attainable.
The new revenue estimates from for the plan from the Eller College at the University of Arizona, the numbers will be available at your next meeting, which is coming up on April the 4th. That will be very, very revealing, won't it?
Absolutely. We expect to have those numbers from the Eller College actually by the end of this month, so several days before our April 4th meeting, and the Technical Management Committee, which is the group of jurisdictional professionals that advises the RTA board, is set to meet prior to our meeting. So we're going to have some more facts to deal with, not only in terms of revenue estimates, but also recommendations from the Technical Management Committee on some of the areas of a draft plan where we are still struggling to find agreement. But I don't think that the nine of us would have agreed to two additional meetings on top of the two that were already scheduled if we weren't all committed to trying to find a way to move a draft plan forward into public review.
I've only got a few seconds. Will there be any money for the migrant situation coming out of the out of Washington with this continuing resolution expected to be signed tomorrow, Rex Scott?
Well, that's a question for President Biden, Senator Kelly, Senator Sinema, Congressman Ciscomani. They're the ones who need to find a way to come together so that border communities like ours are not dealing with the situation that we've been able to avoid because of the work of Pima County and our partners in the region. So I certainly hope our federal representatives are going to do the right thing before the end of this month.
All right. And Casa Salidas, they actually laid off a bunch of people today, anticipating that there won't be the money available on April 1st. We'll see what happens, though. Pima County Supervisor Rex Scott, always a pleasure. Thank you, Supervisor Scott.
Thank you, Bill. Always appreciate the time. You have a great day.
You too. All right, we're going to take a break right here. Coming up after the break, our monthly CEO interview series presented by Sun Corridor, Inc., right after this.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com.
Family-owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com.
Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
It's time for the CEO interview series on the Buckmaster Show, presented by Sun Corridor Inc., a transformative economic development organization representing one of the most dynamic and growing major business centers in North America. Sun Corridor Inc. is a CEO-driven regional alliance whose members aggressively champion mega-regional issues that impact economic competitiveness and quality of life. The organization has helped to drive significant business investment into the Tucson and Southern Arizona region through primary job creation, resulting in an economic impact of $36 billion, with more than 200 company locates and expansions supporting 57,000 jobs. For more information, visit suncorridorinc.com.
And joining us on the live line for this month's CEO interview series, Matthew Gasperi, the president and CEO of Tucson Federal Credit Union from 2007 to 2021. Mr. Gasperi served as the executive vice president and chief operating officer of TFCU. Prior to that, he served in various roles, including a bunch of different roles, including vice president of operations, and he actually joined TFCU in 1992. He currently serves as a member of the El Rio Health Center Foundation Board and has served on the boards of the Old Pueblo Rotary and Education Enrichment Foundation. Matthew, how are you?
I'm really good, Bill. How are you? I appreciate being here today.
Doing well. I'm looking forward to this. Good. I want to learn more about credit unions, and I think people are always confused when it comes to what's a credit union, what's a bank. So why don't we begin with what is a federal credit union, Matthew?
Well, I'm glad you asked. That's a great question. Credit unions are not-for-profit cooperatives. So the products and services that we have and that we offer are very similar to what you would find in any financial institution, savings, checking. We're full service, auto loans, mortgage, wealth management, et cetera. But being a not-for-profit cooperative means that our responsibility is to give back our earnings to our membership in the form of lower rates and fees or, investment in technology that removes friction from their ability to do banking and those types of things. And credit unions have a volunteer board of directors, so they do not get paid for their service. And each member of a credit union is the owner of the credit union, and they each have a vote for that board of directors. And so structurally, quite different than banks, but as far as functional goes, we look very similar.
How about regulations? Are regulations similar for the American banking the banking industry, and then there's the credit union industry? Are they pretty similar or different, Matthew?
They're mostly the same, yeah. the NCUA, which is our regulator, tends to mirror what the ABA does based on what the Fed requires, and so very similar. Capital requirements for us are a little bit higher than the banks, but as far as shock testing balance sheets and those types of things, very similar. The difference with a credit union is that we can only serve specific areas of a region, depending on how we're laid out. So for TFCU, we serve Pima County only. And so we have some restriction in that regard, but from a regulatory perspective, we tend to have to abide by the things that come out of Congress, just like the banks do.
Well, it certainly seemed attractive to you in 1992 when you joined Tucson Federal Credit Union. What was it that attracted you to go this route rather than to the more traditional banks?
In 1990 and 1991, I worked for Southern Southwest Savings and Loan. And so this was at the time where savings and loans were entering receivership and all of that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But what I liked about the SNL was that it was very customer oriented, customer focused. And so the types of service that you provided, made you feel good when you went home at night. And so after that, there was a commercial bank that bought out the assets of Southwest Savings. And so I went to work for that bank for just a little while, and I don't want to say anything negative because it was a good place to work. Some of the methodologies as far as customer service goes, they just were a little bit different than I was used to at the savings and loan. And so I started talking to some people and looking around, and it sounded like credit unions had a philosophy for service and for community involvement that met my needs a little bit better.
You know, when I was a kid, my parents opened up a savings account for me, went down to the local financial institution and kind of taught me a little bit about that. Financial literacy for children and youth is so important, isn't it, Matthew?
It really is. And we've been in the financial literacy business for over 20 years, going into schools, elementary and junior high and high schools, teaching financial literacy. Often the curriculum in public schools does not offer that. And so we've tried to fill that gap with our education series. It's really never too early for kids to start learning about those types of things. And so the education series talked about the savings and how to save and credit reports and what that's for and why that's important and finance charges and just kind of responsible banking types of things, so that as the kids got a little bit older, they would be entering, into a relationship with a bank or credit union with some knowledge already, so that there were no surprises and they weren't making bad decisions going, right at the beginning.
How about a big picture question, Michael? What is the future of the banking industry? What's it going to look like? How is it shaping up right now?
It's interesting, but the I'm of the belief that that the branches are here to stay. So human nature is such that, and human behavior is such that we want to gather, we want to see people face to face, and so there will remain a role for brick and mortar, I think, for the foreseeable future. But the reality is that more and more technology and self-service is where the banking trends tend to be going. It's beginning to look like a retail transaction, really, from a banking perspective. You go to the app and you find what you want, you select it, and then you go. And so similar to an Amazon transaction. And so you enter our app and you want a certificate of deposit, you open it up, you deposit that money and you go. And so having that opportunity for our members is really important. And removing as much friction as possible is also critical. So that the experience is very similar to a retail type of transaction. My strategy has always been to look for friction and try and solve that. Whatever's getting in the way of somebody being able to do a self-serve or type of transaction like that, get rid of friction. So passwords, remembering passwords. Biometrics now are a possibility, and so introduce that to the membership. Manual entry for transactions. Well, voice banking is now available. So staying up on those trends so that we offer our members what is the latest and the greatest out there. But more than anything, self-serve and that type of thing seems to be where banking is going. And I just want to add this one thing. As that continues to be the case, as technology continues to manage more and more of financial services for people, it's never been more important to keep data safe, and data security and member data is our most prized possession. And so we allocate a lot of resources from a budget perspective to cybersecurity. I often say it's the only part of the budget that I'll never say no to. Mm-hmm. And so that's the responsibility of an organization, of a financial institution, is we're going to give you all this technology so that you can bank in any way, shape, or form that you want. But we're going to keep your data safe as well, because at the end of the day, that's our most important job, is the security and the safety of the member and the member data.
Yeah, I agree with that for sure. Matthew Gasperi is with us. Matthew heads up Tucson Federal Credit Union. This is part of our CEO interview series presented by Sun Corridor. What about economic development? How does TFCU play into that, helping local small businesses thrive and being an economic engine?
In the last couple of years, we've reignited our commercial loan and business services arm of our business. And we did that with the intentional purpose of wanting to be more of a partner for the small businesses in Arizona. We do an incredible job on the retail side, on the consumer side, But small businesses are the lifeblood of any community. And so part of the way that we want to help with economic development is being a partner with small business and kind of walking hand in hand with them through their journey from inception to success. And what that looks like is access to capital for smaller dollar amounts that may be a little bit more difficult to get at other institutions. So $200,000, $500,000, $750,000. So smaller dollar amounts that are critical for small business, but might be under, you know, the radar of a larger institution. And so giving that access to capital and being able to do SBA lending and really just being there for small business so that we can help them grow and thrive as we've been doing for consumers for 87 years.
That's part of your whole commercial or business service and commercial lending initiative then, isn't it?
It is. It is.
Matthew Gasparri with us on our CEO interview series presented by Sun Corridor, Inc. We'll take a break right here, and I've got more with Matthew coming up, including the 87th anniversary of Tucson Federal Credit Union coming up next month. We'll be right back with Matthew.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastropub, serving an ever-changing menu of craft beer and fine fare. Savor the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at West Lambert Lane and North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies. On the web at noblehops.com. The Regional Transportation Authority plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax. The RTA is the largest annual funder of regional transportation improvements in the region, averaging more than $100 million in tax revenue each year. The RTA is preparing a new 20-year plan for public review prior to a May 2025 election. Sign up at rtanext.com for updates.
Tucson International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We're also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. And your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Are you ready to immerse yourself in a diverse culture while wandering through bustling markets, sampling exotic cuisines, or forging connections with people from all walks of life? Well, Bon Voyage Travel is here to plan your perfect journey. Whether you're setting off on a solo expedition, embarking on a group adventure, or simply dreaming of far-off destinations, we can help create your custom experience. The road ahead is filled with endless possibilities. Visit bvtravel.com to find your specialized Bon Voyage Travel advisor today.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Welcome back. It is Buckmaster, and it is the Buckmaster Show. This month's CEO interview presented by Sun Corridor, Inc. is with Matthew Gasparri, President and CEO of Tucson Federal Credit Union. And I was surprised to learn that TFCU is going to be celebrating, Matthew, 87 years, 87th anniversary next month. What's that all about?
Yeah, we're very excited about that. Proud of that. You know, we started in 1937, and credit unions usually have an origin story similar to this. But we started in the basement of Tucson High School. Originally, we were Tucson Teachers Federal Credit Union, and And so from there, growing over the many, many years and changing our charter so that anybody that lives, works, or worships in Pima County can join TFCU, it's been fun to watch. And I've actually, seen, quite a bit of that in the last 30 years. But we're excited about the 87th anniversary. Second Friday of every April is TFCU Day, which Mayor Romero designated a couple of years ago. And so we'll be celebrating the anniversary on that day, and we're going to be performing random acts of kindness in the community. In the past, we've paid off daycare accounts and gift cards to school administrators, and just going out and trying to make people's lives a little bit easier to celebrate them, because TFCU has made it 87 years and will make it 87 more because of the community and the way that they've embraced us over the years.
A caller had a good question. How does one choose a credit union? What are some of the guidelines? Actually, a very good question from a listener that just came in. Matthew, go ahead.
Yeah, you bet. It's a great question. So most credit unions now have a kind of a broader ability to join. So, for example, for TFCU, you just have to live, work, or worship in Pima County. There are some credit unions that are affiliated with select employee groups or particular companies. There are some credit unions that are, if they're military based, then they have an ability to have people who have been in the military or have family that have been in the military, they're able to join. So each credit union is unique in that way. And so you just kind of need to look for whichever one kind of fits your desires as far as products and services and see that if there was a way to join. That is something that, to your point, is different because we're here to serve a specific population. That's the reason that we were created in 1937, and other credit unions were formed, in similar fashion for similar purposes with different groups.
Matthew, how do you know you're doing the right thing? How about how do you prioritize member satisfaction, community involvement? How do those things all come together in your opinion, sir?
That's a great question. Member satisfaction, it's really our overarching goal, and we measure that through surveys that we get back from the members to make sure that we're providing a level of service that they can be proud of. But community impact is and engagement is what we do. It's why we're here. And so everything that we do from a business perspective that helps us earn some money, in large part is being done so that we have resources that we can then turn around and give back to the community. And, over the last decade, we've been able to impact the community with, several million dollars in donations and thousands of hours of time and hundreds of nonprofits being assisted and that type of thing. But it starts with a business model that works so that the resources can be accumulated. And so the member satisfaction component is ensuring that we're doing the right thing so that our business continues to thrive, so that we can then assist the community in continuing to thrive.
Yeah, and I like that getting back to your 87th anniversary, the TFCU Day, I think it's second Friday of April of each year you celebrate, and you've kind of designated that random acts of kindness to celebrate TFCU Day, and that resonates with me, I'll tell you that, Matthew.
It does with us, too, and, we've done that we've done that longer than there was TFCU Day, but for the last couple of years, and we're doing it again next month. I always leave having been out in the community and doing those things, feeling like I'm the winner in all of that. We're the winners in all of that, meaning that the satisfaction to assist your fellow community members runs really deep. It's, it's better to give than it is to receive. And so we end that day invigorated and energized because of what we've been able to do. And if you can run a business that creates resources so that then you can give back to the community, there really are no losers. But it's one of my favorite days of the year because of the way we're able to one-on-one individually talk to people and impact them versus larger groups, which is great too. But we're a community financial institution, so being able to impact people on a one-on-one basis, face-to-face, is very, very satisfying.
So do you encourage your employees to empower people to improve their lives within our community?
We do. We do. And the employees have a single day of volunteerism that they're able to do annually, so they're paid to go out and give to the community one time a year. But many, many times throughout the year, we will have projects that we're doing out in the community that helps to serve. And so it allows us to partner with them, and it allows us to partner with nonprofits so that they can do what they do best. And so our getting our hands dirty or our financial support helps the nonprofits, and we can scale it that way. And our employees love that. We served 88 nonprofits last year, volunteered 2,300 hours, delivered 479 financial education sessions, you know, just in the last year. And it's a big reason why employees, when they come here, it's why they stay, because of our commitment to the community that's authentic, and they get to be a part of that. It's not just a few of us going out. They all get to be a part of giving back to the community.
I know you're really on board with Sun Corridor Inc., aren't you?
I am. It's such a great organization, and you know, I'm on another board with Joe Snell, and I've been a longtime admirer of what they do. And when I became CEO and wanted to focus a little bit more on the business side, it was really, really important for TFCU to become involved and to partner with organizations that are critical to bringing, you know, business to the community or helping to shape legislation. You know, we're an important part of the community. We have a voice and we have resources, and we want to be able to use those for good. And that includes on business development. And Sun Corridor does an amazing job of that.
I want to kind of bring it back here as we get ready to wrap up to these changing trends. Oh my gosh, technology happening so fast, and it's happening in every industry, and especially you're a service provider. It's happening in service delivery. Michael Gasperi, why don't you talk a bit about how that change is going to be impacting consumers?
You see that on the retail side before you see it on the banking side, but the change really is about being able to do everything you want to do in whatever manner you want to do it, at whatever time you want to do it. We have a mission of meeting our members where they are, and what that means is that we're available whenever they need us, wherever they need us, however they need us, whether that's at the branch or video or at the ATM or the ITM, just making sure that they've got access to their accounts all the time in whatever form works. And they'll continue to be that move of disruption of fintechs in the banking and financial industry on a going forward basis. And so as fintechs and as startups continue to find a way to integrate into financial services and remove more friction, TFCU has to be along on that ride to make sure that our members have the same capabilities to do banking in, again, kind of frictionless and in whatever way they want to.
Matthew Gasperi, enjoyed the time, enjoyed the visit. President, CEO, Tucson Federal Credit Union, our guest on our CEO interview series presented by Sun Corridor. Thank you very much, Matthew, for the time.
Bill, thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
And for folks that would like to learn more, and I hope you do go to their website, visit suncorridorinc.com. That's going to do it for the Buckmaster Show. On behalf of Matthew Gasperi, our guest on our interview series, and Tom Fairbanks, engineering and producing the show on the other side of the glass, Bill Buckmaster wishing everybody well.